Chapter 17. Blowing out the hydraulic lines on a force feedback system wasn't intellectually demanding work, but it had been exactly what Hicks needed. There was one set of unambiguous procedures to follow and one desired outcome. When he finished, there were no repercussions to argue, no pros and cons to debate. Doing the job correctly was good. Screwing it up wasn't. Everybody needed to do that kind of work sometimes. Even Gandhi and Einstein must have dug a hole once in a while, Hicks thought, just to smell the dirt. Maybe they'd even gone out for a drink afterward, although not in a mall. According to Walker, this was the largest mall upstairs, above Anchor Point's equator, although Hicks had seen bigger. Malls didn't vary much from place to place. One was pretty much like every other one. This was deliberate, the idea being that familiar surroundings would make people feel more at home and less like exiles in far-flung regions of space. From Walker's description, Hicks had expected to find a lot more people on the main thoroughfare, but the place was practically deserted. There were some bored-looking window shoppers and a few more people sitting on benches by this or that fountain, tossing tokens at centerpieces. Maybe there was some kind of exclusive, members-only VIP party somewhere that he hadn't been invited to. Or maybe Spence and Walker hadn't been exaggerating when they'd told him the Sulaco's arrival had sent everyone working round the clock. In which case, the Anchor Point workforce needed more backup from their unions, not more places to shop. Right now, however, he'd settle for a beer and a shot of decent whiskey. It wasn't long before he came to a sign that sounded promising. Stasha's Bigger Jigger. The name was scrawled across the red brick facade in fake neon tubes bent into graceful script. Below it were two windows with brightly lit signs. One advertised Schlitz, Budweiser, and Black Label. The other boasted Zubrowka, Boodles, and Blue Sapphire. Hicks couldn't remember if any of those brands still existed or had ever existed at all. Boodles sounded a bit suspect. Maybe the signs were supposed to be ironic. Every time he woke from cold sleep, he'd hear irony was making a comeback, and somehow he always went back into a sleep capsule before it did. So far, irony seemed to be running late. He went in to find the place was mostly empty. Across the room, two pool tables, one with screaming neon orange felt, the other with the traditional green, stood idle, ignored by the three or four patrons. Each sat alone, engrossed in something on the monitor built into the tabletop. The back wall was a floor-to-ceiling screen, where a football game went unappreciated by everyone except the bartender watching it from the far end of the bar. After a minute or so, Hicks realized it was a rerun of the first-round playoff game from 5 or 6 years back, Brazil versus Haiti. He'd lost money on it, but oddly enough, he couldn't remember which team had won. It hadn't been much money, so what the hell? Only one person was sitting at the bar, and he'd obviously been there a while. Hicks took the stool on the guy's left, and the bartender came over immediately. She was in the vague territory between mid-40s and early-60s, with short, curly, snow-white hair, dark brown eyes, and the dignified bearing of someone who didn't take any shit. Maybe she was the owner, although she certainly didn't look like a Stosh, more like Ripley, 30 years older.
Stout, or the closest thing to it, please,
Hicks said, fishing the chain with his dog tags out from under his shirt.
Got Nightside on tap, she told him. The real thing, not a fax.
Works for me.
He detached one of the dog tags and handed it to her. She inserted it into the pay slot on the bar, then picked up a glass.
Run a tab or PAYG?
She asked, pulling the Nightside with an expert movement that made her bicep bulge in her shirt sleeve.
I'll pay as I go, Hicks said. Keeps things neat.
The guy on the stool beside him roused and turned to look at him through heavy-lidded bloodshot eyes. There was half a glass of red gold amber on the bar in front of him. No doubt the latest over several hours, Hicks thought, unless he was an even cheaper drunk than Wierzbowski. For a second, he saw Wierzbowski's face, drunkenly indignant at the insult and too trash to complain.
You're Hicks,
the guy said, his voice thick and slow.
Off the Sulaco, right?
Who's asking?
Hicks said, keeping his tone light as the bartender gave back his dog tag.
Tully Charles A., Tech 5 of the Ye old tissue lab. D-fucking-A.
He shook his head and gave a short laugh.
Goddamn, the Sulaco. Lucky.
Hicks paused in the act of clipping his dog tag back onto the chain.
Who's lucky? You?
Tully laughed again.
You,
he said.
You're lucky. You're a woman. Lucky son of a bitch, man. How do you figure that?
Hicks took a sip from his glass. It had been a long time since his last nightside, and the taste was a rush.
Travel all that way from LV whatever with those fucking things?
His hangdog face turned mournful.
All those fucking things on board, and they didn't touch you. You know something about it?
Hicks asked sharply.
Tell me.
Tully, Charles A., gave him a drunken side eye.
Uh-uh. Ain't talking. Had to sign NDAs. Non-disclosure agreements. Every single one of us signed. Had to. Or lose all our fucking shares. Tell anybody. The same thing. Lose everything. They were on the ship with us.
Hicks felt the hair on the back of his neck stand up. The synthetic who had done his debrief had said they'd just found a little biological matter on the cargo deck and they'd taken care of it. But of course, they hadn't taken care of it, and now he couldn't imagine what had made him believe they would. He looked at the bartender, who was down at the far end again, watching larger-than-life players scramble around on a grass field, oblivious to the existence of xenomorphs.
Must be nice, he thought. Everyone should be like that, all the time. They sure were, Tully was saying. I saw them. Now I can't unsee them. But I'm trying. I'm trying. Maybe this'll do it.
He finished the rest of his ale in one long swallow. Hicks leaned closer to him, lowering his voice.
When did you see them? Where were they? How many?
Hey, Tully blinked at Hicks like he'd suddenly awakened while talking in his sleep. He looked over at the bartender, at the few other customers, then up at the ceiling.
This is a bad place to talk, and I gotta go.
He tried to slip off the stool, but Hicks grabbed his arm.
You're not going anywhere, he said in a low, dangerous voice. Not until you.
Wincing, Tully tried to twist out of his grip.
Hey, I didn't sign up for this shit. I came out here to build designer ecosystems, not designer weapons. You want Madagascar? I'm your man. I did that, you know? You can see it. It's on this level. I think. Where are we?
He looked around again.
We're right here.
Hicks tightened his grip, knowing that he was hurting the guy. He was doing a lot of that lately.
Talk.
Okay, Tully said. But not here. You want an earful? Shift after next, DP-54, level 7.
He jerked his chin at Hicks's flexi.
It's on the map.
Hicks let go of him. Tully backed into a stool, begged its pardon, and fled out the door just as a group of people were coming in. They called after him by name, but he didn't stop.
End of shift happy hour, the bartender said,
moving to the center of the bar, waving cheerfully as more customers came in.
Just letting you know. It's going to get pretty drunk and crowded in here.
Hicks thanked her for the warning and finished his nightside. A couple of waiters came out of the back as he got up to leave. On his way out, he glanced at the back wall screen. Halftime score, 4-1, Haiti.
It wasn't over yet.
He wondered if it ever would be.
And Bishop has agreed to undergo complete physical and chemical analysis?
Wells said, repeating what Adele Trent had just told her. This must have been how the legendary Spartan boy felt with the stolen fox under his shirt, gnawing on his guts, he thought. Except the boy had gotten off easy, with a mere garden variety fox. Rossetti had Kevin Fox, who was now demanding to know Bishop's test results.
He's clean, Dr. Trent told him. No irregularities have been detected, and no trace of any alien cellular material.
Any signs he's been tampered with? Wells asked. Or reprogrammed? Did our UPP friends add anything new besides the legs?
It would be just like them.
Dr. Trent shook her head. He's still being examined, but so far we've found nothing.
So far, Fox leaned forward. What about the data on the xenomorphs? Is it all there, intact and undamaged?
Adele Trent hesitated, giving Rossetti a troubled glance. It seems to be, she replied. We can't tell if they copied his memory, but we should assume they did. She glanced at the colonel again. It's what we'd have done. Tampering is very hard to detect due to the nature of the neural net. Even Bishop himself wouldn't know.
The UPP's tech isn't as up-to-date as ours, Wells said. So we can only hope that in the process of copying, the UPP didn't damage anything, inadvertently or not.
She looked pointedly at Rossetti as if she believed this wouldn't have occurred to him.
Just get on with your brief, Rossetti said, sick of listening to the weaponized Barbie and Ken goons lecture them on how to suck weaponized eggs. You want Dr. Trent to clone the cultures, which is why you didn't want Schumann here.
This has nothing to do with diplomacy. Fox's voice was quietly grave.
Doesn't it? Rossetti replied. You mean, we aren't discussing a violation of the Strategic Arms Reduction Treaty?
Excuse me, Colonel? Fox was the portrait of dignified innocence. I didn't hear anyone mention military applications. Did you, Dr. Trent? The exobiologist hesitated again.
Well, technically, no. A case might be made for this as research into applied exobiology.
She gave Rossetti an apologetic look. In fact, we have a standing mandate to study all alien life forms, wherever we encounter them, under any and all circumstances. Our preliminary analysis of the material from the Sulaco reveals the potential for remarkable adaptive and healing properties, the therapeutic possibilities for degenerative conditions, for cancer research. She spread her hands. As risky as it is, this might lead to our biggest medical breakthrough in 100 years or more.
Imagine it, Colonel!
Beaming, Wells picked up the ball and ran with it.
If biological material can be programmed not only to kill malignancies, but to prevent even the very beginning of abnormal cell growth.
So what are you proposing, Dr. Trent? Rossetti said, looking only at her, his back to the other two.
Dr. Trent started to answer, but Fox was too fast.
This is obvious, Colonel, he said. We nourish the cells in stasis tubes and keep them under constant observation, maintaining a human presence at all times. We terminate any developing embryos before they become viable, unless or until we receive authorization for additional procedures.
He sat back, adding, to further cancer research. Of course.
Of course, Rossetti said. Cancer research. Our motives are purely humanitarian. Is that all for now, or is there more?
Ambassador Schumann will be hearing from Earth shortly.
Wells looked exasperated at having to spell this out for him.
As soon as he does, priority will be given to military development of the alien. Let's be honest, we know that because we know where our orders come from. The decision has already been made. Waiting for the go-ahead is simply a formality.
The prospect that the UPP may be weaponizing the alien makes the matter that much more urgent, Fox added. They're several years behind us scientifically, but they do have some bright minds over there. This could put them well ahead of where they were, to where they're breathing down our necks.
We can't wait. Fox sounded less like a news mouthpiece today. Wells must have been coaching him.
Any decision that concerns the military here is mine, Rossetti said in a tone of finality. Whether it has to do with personnel, a course of action, or weapons.
Wells frowned at him.
I don't think you understand, Rossetti.
Colonel Rossetti, he corrected her.
They're not fooling around, Colonel, Fox said, impatient now. They won't just break you. When they get through with you, it'll be like your career never happened, like you never happened. These are the real shot callers, the ones who are really in charge. They can make you disappear, erase you like you never existed. And you know it.
Rossetti decided he had reached his daily limit of company bullshit.
Schumann must be informed, he said coldly, in case he has to answer any inquiries concerning our new direction in cancer research.
Of course, Fox said, although it's best not to make any public announcement or to be too optimistic too early. Giving people false hope about cancer is so cruel.